You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Life got you down? Well, hang in there, because it's time for the Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch here on Post Show Recaps. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, joined always by my good friend, Jacob Redman. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I am doing so well. We're back again. They keep letting us do this, Zach. I don't know how, but yeah, here we are again, breaking down another episode of Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah, I was talking to Rob on one of the patron casts, and I was telling him, yeah, like I said last week, it's so surreal to be on the network, and they keep letting us do this. I don't know why, and yet, Here we are, having so much fun talking Avatar. It's funny, because this episode, me and you in the pre-show, we had some differing opinions on this episode, so I'm excited to get into it and hash out what we saw differently.
Yeah, I agree. I think that season one has a lot of times where they're setting up stories. And sometimes it means that, you know, they're just setting up characters and the events of the episode are inconsequential. I don't think that's true for this episode, but there is a lot of setup. But I think it's good.
I try to judge the episodes based on their own merits. So when I'm watching the episode, I try not to compare it to any other episode I've seen prior. Because if I'm doing that for every episode season one, then they'd get blown out the water if I'm comparing them to some of the episodes of standout episodes of season two or season three. So I try to just judge them based on just their own, like, their own story and all that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Zach, since you've started doing this Avatar podcast, is there anything you've picked up from the Avatar universe that you're doing in your daily life?
Well, one thing is, because I was never very analytical when I watched TV shows, but I've been rewatching just random episodes of other shows, and I notice I'm watching it with a much more focus, I feel like. Every other TV show I'm watching, I'm way more analytical, way more looking for little details, because every time I watch Avatar The Last Airbender getting ready for this podcast, I'm always taking so many notes, trying to look at every single tiny thing, so I notice that's carried over to every other thing I'm watching. What about you? Have you noticed any other things you're doing in your daily life?
You know, I wish that it was that applicable. What I was going to say is that I have wanted to drink tea, which is not something that I normally like. But yeah, since we've been doing this, I've been like wanting to make tea, you know, boil some water, put in some ginseng. I'm not a huge tea drinker, but I think, you know, by the end of this podcast watch through, I think I'll be a tea drinker.
Yeah, you know, tea is good for your vocal cords and all that. So the more tea you drink, maybe it'll help your podcasting ability going forward.
Oh, yeah. So, if you notice any improvements next week, it's because I finally broke out the teapot, tea kettle. Which one is it?
I think both work. Not gonna
okay, lie. There you go. So I'll break out the pot or kettle. And I'll be back at it again.
Yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to touch upon, Jacob, before we jump into the recap?
No, I think I'm ready. I will say, last week we messed up. We did not say it was a spoiler podcast before we got started. But look, we can grow and we will get better, and we're going to drop a big spoiler warning right now. So boom, you're warned. This is a spoiler filled Avatar rewatch podcast.
Yes. And Jacob is such a kind man because he's saying we, but last week it was I who dropped the big spoiler, because Jacob actually was doing a good job. He didn't drop any spoilers because we didn't give a spoiler alert. But then I was just going all willy nilly and I was dropping spoiler bombs left and right. So it's good. Thank you, Jacob, for telling everybody. Yes, this is a spoiler filled podcast. And yes, going forward, there will be spoilers.
Zach, just like, you know, Team Avatar would never blame each other, you and I, we're one team. People might come on, but we're the OGs, you know, we are Team Avatar podcasting. So, if you make a mistake, it's my mistake. And if I make one, I'm sure that you'll pick me up too.
Oh, shucks. What a great friend Jacob is. On that note, well, before we get into the recaps, if you guys ever want to send us any feedback, any questions, any general statements, you can always email us at avatar@postshowrecaps.com.
Yeah, as I just said to Zach, you know, we're part of Team Avatar. You can join us by sending in that feedback. We do record on the weekend, so if you get feedback in Friday morning, we will, be eager to see what you're thinking about the podcast as well. You also can join Team Avatar Podcasting.
Yeah. All right. On that note, we'll jump straight into the recap. So the episode opens and Aang is excited to finally be on his way back to the Air Temple. But Katara warns him a lot could have changed in the time he's been gone. And I think Katara, from the get-go, she realizes, like, there's a high possibility that all of Aang's fellow airbenders have been massacred by the Fire Nation.
Yeah, this is something that Gran-Gran mentions earlier when they're at the Water Tribe. She says, no one's seen an air nomad in 100 years. Like, you guys are extinct. So it seems like Aang's not really fazed by that. I guess he just believes. But yeah, Katara is like already prepared for what is going to be a really hard realization for Aang.
Yeah, I think he is fazed by it. And sadly for Aang, we'll see it later in the episode, he's kind of in denial. He doesn't believe that the Fire Nation could have possibly made it to the Air Temple. But Katara, from the beginning, she realizes she's almost certain that the Fire Nation has sadly genocided Aang's people. Which, I remember when I first watched this episode, I was like, wow, this is pretty heavy stuff for a children's show, honestly. We're talking about genocide, we're talking about a race being wiped out. Because I watched this when I was a little bit older. I was in the 9th grade or 10th grade, I forget. But, so it was fine for me, but I imagine you're in elementary school, you're just turning on, watching some Avatar, and you're seeing skeletons and dead bodies and all. I was like, talking races being wiped out, I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I think they do a good job of towing the line between serious and children's show. There's nothing ever like graphic shown. I mean, it is a child show. So I think that they do a good job. I mean, they actually have real themes in the show. Zuko's like concerned about honor. He like is actually struggling with real emotions, whereas most children's shows are like slapstick comedy at best.
And I think that's one of Avatar's main strengths. They're able to have great comedic character moments, as well as these deep, impactful, meaningful plot lines and such. So, yeah, I think they do a great job with that throughout the whole series, and especially noticeable in this episode.
Yeah, totally agreed.
So they continue on their journey. Aang quickly wakes Sokka up by telling him there's a snake in his sleeping bag because Sokka just doesn't want to leave. I thought this was a little funny random scene because Aang, what he does, he like grabs a stick and drags it along Sokka's sleeping bag, and Sokka just jumps out and is ready to go.
Yeah, it's pretty predictable here. I mean, Aang says, hey, get up, Sokka. Sokka's like, I want to go back to sleep. And, you know, 5 seconds later, there's a snake in his sleeping bag. It seems a bit predictable. But here Sokka is, in this episode, he gets more to, like, the lovable idiot rather than, like, completely aloof. He just wants to sleep and eat. Like, he's got very simple desires. I think it's funny.
Yes, I agree. That's a good, very good point, because I was thinking that as well. This episode, Sokka's more, he's still a moron, but he's more of like a lovable moron compared to episode one, where it was like, my God, Sokka, how annoying can you get?
Yeah.
I was actually kind of frustrated watching episode one. I was like, man, Sokka's not always like this. But this episode, nah, he's definitely more lovable moron than just moron.
Agreed.
So we continue on and we go back to the Fire Nation. Zuko tells Uncle Iroh not to mention the Avatar on the docks. He doesn't want anybody to know that they have encountered the Avatar. And then we're introduced to the antagonist of season one, Commander Zhao. Jacob, what were your initial thoughts upon seeing Commander Zhao?
Commander Zhao is intimidating. You know, Zuko, he seems regular height. Commander Zhao's like a whole head above him. Very scary person. I would not want to take him on in a fight. As we'll see, Zuko's like happy to take him on. But I think it's actually interesting. Jason Isaacs, the actor who voices Commander Zhao, was in a movie and the creators saw that character and they were like, oh, let's make someone who looks like this. And then they happened to get him to voice act. So I think it's pretty funny that, you know, the actual voice actor is as intimidating, or at least he looked as intimidating as Zhao is in the show.
That's really cool. I didn't know that, actually. So they have some great voice actors for the antagonist in Avatar, because we're going to have Gray DeLeo, an amazing voice actress in her own right, voicing Azula. And then Mark Hamill is going to jump in season 3 as the voice of Fire Lord Ozai. So they really hit it out of the park when they were casting all these voice actors.
Yeah. What do you think about Commander Zhao?
I like Commander Zhao a lot. It's kind of disappointing because we don't really see him after season 1. And I get that. Like, Azula is such a force in her own right. But I enjoy Commander Zhao in season 1. And I think he has some sick burns, as we'll see going forward. He's a very good, like, he does such a good job getting under Zuko's skin, I feel like.
Yeah, I like that Commander Zhao is both an antagonist to Zuko, but he's also an antagonist to Team Avatar. It's interesting how we get these storylines. Like, most of the time in an Avatar episode, we'll have, you know, Zuko's storyline and Aang's storyline, and sometimes they interact, but Zhao's kind of one of the characters that is a bad guy for both groups. Like, he's antagonistic, you know, trying to capture the Avatar, which is obviously what Zuko wants to do, but also, like, trying to capture the Avatar, which, like, clearly makes him an enemy of Team Avatar.
Yes, exactly. And then, so Zhao asked them why they're at his harbor. And then we get a funny little scene with Iroh and Zuko trying to fabricate a reason that their ship is damaged. But Zhao is onto them. Like, from the get-go, he knows that they've probably encountered the Avatar, because there's no way that their excuse is that they ran into an Earth Kingdom ship. But there's no way an Earth Kingdom ship could have done the damage that happened to their ship. So Zhao asked them, I thought this was hilarious, to regale him with all the thrilling details. I never even heard the word regale prior to this episode, not gonna lie.
I know, it's, you know, another example of the Fire Nation just speaking really fancy, you know, telleth in the first episode by Zuko, regale by Commander Zhao. I mean, these people are highfalutin. Go on.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, that challenge your point. They're just so high class, like...
Yeah, I could never imagine someone from the Southern Water Tribe hitting us with a regale. I do think it's funny how small Zuko's ship is compared to the other battleships. The warships are, like, massive, massive ships. And then you have Zuko's ship, which, like, looks kind of pathetic in comparison.
Yeah, when I saw that, what I assumed is that Fire Lord Ozai just sent him on his way with a little ship and Uncle Iroh and basically told him to just go buzz off somewhere while he gets everything done back home. Because they send Zuko on this quest, and I'm pretty sure they don't think Zuko has any chance of capturing the Avatar. So they just send him on this wild goose chase, sadly.
It's interesting, in the first few episodes, you know, we do hear that Zuko wants to do this for his honor. But it's not as clear, at least it wasn't to me, that Zuko's not allowed to come home. And furthermore, that this is some wild goose chase. Like, it kind of seems like catching the Avatar should be, like, a privileged task. Like, it should be something someone wants to do. So it is a little weird to find out that actually, you know, Zuko's got a tiny ship. Like, it's really just like a wild errand they're sending him off to do rather than something that's prestigious.
Yeah, I mean, they'd love to capture the Avatar, but I don't think they're putting all their eggs in the basket of Zuko capturing the Avatar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true that.
So we'll keep moving on. So Zhao asked him to regale him with all the thrilling details. And the next scene, we see Team Avatar flying on Appa, and Sokka realizes that Aang used all his blubbered seal jerky to start the fire the night prior. Now, Jacob, would you ever eat some blubbered seal jerky? Would you ever try that?
I gotta say, I would not. I'm a vegetarian, much like Aang. And really? I think blubbered seal jerky might be one of those things I would not eat. I will also say I'm a Boy Scout, and I know that the best way to start a fire is not jerky. There's a stick on the ground next to the fire that Aang uses to wake Sokka up, but he's using jerky to start the fire? Like, what are you doing? That was crazy.
Honestly, true. I forgot about the stick that yet he doesn't use that for the fire. He uses jerky.
Exactly. Zach, what about you? Would you eat some blubbered seal jerky?
No, I'm not a vegetarian, but I'm not a big jerky guy myself. I think, like, jerky in grocery stores is overpriced and not very good. That's my lukewarm take. I'm not a big jerky guy, so I don't think I'd be chomping on blubbered seal jerky anytime soon.
I'll sign off on that one. I do think it's so great how much Sokka loves food. You know, Sokka and Uncle Iroh here seem like they should be long lost friends. They're both super silly. And they both love to chow down on food. We have Iroh with his roast duck, and now we have Sokka with his blubbered seal jerky.
Yeah, Iroh loves food and tea. Those are his two favorite things. You give him food and tea, Zappy, because we kind of jumped over the last scene. At the end, Commander Zhao invites them to talk about the details, and Zuko doesn't want to go, but Iroh's like, no, I'm excited to have Commander Zhao's tea. It's an honor to join him for tea. And when I saw that, I was like, I don't even know if Iroh wants to go, but I bet he just wants the free tea.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he says, you know, ginseng tea, you can get Uncle Iroh to do pretty much anything.
Yeah, exactly. So, now, this is the part where I feel like Avatar gets pretty heavy almost. For these first two episodes and change, everything's pretty lighthearted. But then, while they're flying, Katara drops the bomb on Aang that the Fire Nation is ruthless and that they could have killed all of Aang's fellow airbenders, like they killed her mother. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, I feel kind of bad for Aang. And in turn, Aang, sadly, as we mentioned earlier, he's just in denial here. He just refuses to believe that the Fire Nation could have done this until he sees it with his own eyes later in the episode.
Yeah, and I think this makes sense because, you know, Aang says you need a flying bison to get to the Air Temple. And yeah, it seems really hard to get to the Air Temple. Not only is it like a bunch of mountain ranges, but the Southern Air Temple is built on like essentially like a 180 degree. It's like a straight line up and then temple. So I know that the Fire Nation has tanks and that's how they get up, is they have like grapple guns and, you know, all this technology and such. But it seems really difficult to get up there without an air bison. So I think that Aang's philosophy that, you know, they probably survived and just don't like hang out with the rest of the world makes sense.
I guess. But then, Grant, like you said about Gran earlier in the series, she talks about how nobody's seen an airbender in 100 years. And we do know that airbenders travel. Like, Aang himself has traveled all over the place, even though he's only 12 years old. So I feel like if airbenders were alive, somebody would have seen him in the past 100 years. But at the same time, I can understand why Aang would be. This is his family, pretty much, and they're all gone, and they're all killed at the hands of the Fire Nation. So I can see why he would be in denial of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that, you know, the Southern Air Temple looks really cool. So when we get to it, like, it's a great shot. You get to, you know, see the Southern Air Temple, and it's like really pretty and all that. But yeah, it's going to end up being really sad for Aang.
Yeah, I actually also had a note about that shot, because what they do, they have a shot of all of them flying vertically up the side of a mountain. And then once they get to the top of the mountain, you see in the distance the Southern Air Temple in all its glory. And one thing, I never really noticed how beautiful the Southern Air Temple is until I was taking the screenshot for our discussion thread. And I was like, wow. It's some very beautiful architecture at work there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we see a little glimpse of the other temples. So we see later in the episode, we see the water and earth and fire temples as well. And those are really pretty buildings, too. The architecture in Avatar is really nice.
Yeah, Avatar, the art is amazing, the whole series, and especially the detail with which they draw all these buildings. Each one is so beautiful and immaculate. Well done by the art team at Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yep.
So we keep moving on. Zuko and Zhao are talking Fire Nation politics when Zhao asks Zuko how's the search for the Avatar going. Right as he does that, it's just funny. We see Iroh just drop a bunch of weapons in the background. It's so funny how Iroh, one second he'll be this wise old man, and then like literally the next second he'll be this lovable goof, I feel like.
Yeah, and it seems weird that Uncle Iroh puts himself in that position. Like, he knows that Zhao's going to ask about the Avatar. So if he knows he can't play it cool, then maybe he shouldn't be, you know, messing next to stuff that can fall down. We also learned here that Zuko's been gone for 2 years. And that seems like a long time, just like sailing the world at random, hoping to bump into the Avatar.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Zuko, Zhao has been suspicious the whole time, and he realized that Zuko knew something about the Avatar, so he had Zuko's crew interrogated. And sadly for Zuko, his crew spilled the beans and told Zhao that they had encountered the Avatar and that Aang was the one who damaged their ship.
Yeah, that's a great move. I mean, Zhao interrogating the crew makes sense. I did not see it coming the first time I watched this. I was like, oh, you know, like they're going to lie and they're going to sneak their way out of there. But yeah, it makes total sense. Like interrogate the crew because the crew probably has no loyalty to Prince Zuko.
Yeah, I don't think so. Well, like Zuko just bosses them around. Zuko doesn't seem very nice to his crew members, quite frankly. So
yeah,
I don't think they have too much loyalty towards it.
One thing that doesn't make sense to me is that if the Avatar really did die 100 years ago, then why wouldn't he be reborn as a waterbender, or he or she be reborn as a waterbender?
Yeah, I think, the Avatar, if they die of not natural causes, then isn't the Avatar chain over?
I think it's only if they die. Only if they die in the Avatar state. So I guess potentially it could be the case that maybe, you know, they thought that the Avatar disappeared. But I think it's far more likely that, you know, they killed the Avatar when they killed all of the air nomads. And then the Avatar would be born into the water tribe, and that you should expect an 88-year-old waterbender. Like, that would be my guess.
I think, though, because the water tribe is more prevalent than the air tribe, they realized that no water tribe avatar had been born. So I think what the Fire Nation assumed was that the Avatar, while they were waging this war for 100 years, was that they could wage it with impunity because the Avatar had been killed already in the Avatar state. And they assumed the bloodline of the Avatar was completely done. I think that was their assumption, and it was incorrect because Aang is alive, obviously.
Yeah, well, they got super lucky because I think that's a terrible assumption. I think, yeah, you should be expecting an 88-year-old waterbender who can, like, you know, wreck people at this point. But, you know, maybe, like, I don't fully understand the, you know, Fire Nation war politics. So maybe they had some more logic I'm missing.
Yeah, and they never really get into it, sadly, because that's one of the things I've always been curious about. Like, they do talk about the war. Sokka will talk about it a lot, but I want to see, like, these specific battles and instances, because this war's been going on for, that's a long time for a war, 100 years. I don't think any war in real life has existed for that long. I could be wrong.
Isn't there a war called the 100 Years War, or am I making that up?
You might be right. And my lack of historical knowledge has failed me once again.
Yeah, if you're coming here for historical knowledge, I think you've come to the wrong podcast. We will break down the Avatar history.
And that's it. There's nothing else I'll be breaking down besides Avatar history. I'm your guy. Anything else? Not so much.
Real world history is going to go right past our heads. So after that, after we find out that Zhao has interrogated the crew, we cut back to the Southern Air Temple. And Sokka has such a funny line as they're climbing up. He says, "I'm just a simple guy with simple needs." And he says it, like, so dejected. Like, he's so sad. I felt sad,
hungry, morose. Yeah, Sokka's going through it right now. The struggle is real for poor old Sokka. Just no food. He's just starving. It's funny because Aang and Katara, this whole episode, they're not hungry at all. So I wonder, have they been eating and Sokka just wants more food? Or are Aang and Katara just, they don't mind going a long period of time without food? That's what I wanted, because they don't complain about it once.
I think that they're just probably not as vocal as Sokka. I think, you know, just like, you know, people will have a man cold. Have you ever heard that term before?
No, I've not, actually. So it's a man cold.
Like whenever, you know, a guy typically gets sick, they would just complain about it as if it's like some deadly disease. But like everyone else is able to totally get by, like, without complaining. I think it's one of those cases where, you know, maybe they skipped breakfast and Sokka's like crying about it and everyone else is like, it's fine.
Yeah, so after they climb up, they start playing air ball because Sokka decides to play a little bit of air ball with Aang to get him in a better mood. And air ball is a very interesting game. Jacob, do you want to describe it? They got the pillars, they got their net. Well, dude, what are the rules of air ball, you think?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit weird. So it kind of looks like basketball to me in that there's like a large hole that you're trying to get it in, but the hole, instead of being like vertical, is horizontal. And it kind of seems like you can only jump from spoke to spoke. So like, instead of having, you know, like one court, it's like floor is lava type stuff, where not only do you have to like jump from all these spokes, but you also can like use the poles in the ground to hit the ball and get like unique angles. And I have to say, a non-bender has zero shot to win this game.
Not even a non-bender, a non-airbender, honestly. I think even any other type of bender would struggle a lot. Because even the ball, is the ball not also made out of air? I think one of like Aang's little spheres? Was it not?
No. The ball has like some shape. It looked to me like a basketball, but instead of being like totally enclosed, it has like a few little slits that air can go through. I think a waterbender could hold their own. But, you know, I think that a non-bender's got no shot, and a firebender, too destructive.
A firebender would just burn the pillars.
Exactly.
The game would just be over, because they were made out of wood, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe an earthbender, actually, could play some good defense.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I think the earthbender would struggle the least amongst
But it is called Airball, so I kind of think that, you know, it's made for an airbender. I think that they're going to be wiping the floor with anyone else who's playing.
Yes, definitely. So Aang shows Sokka and Katara where he played air ball all this time, but he's dismayed when he sees the once lively court. It used to be filled with flying bison and airbenders, and now it's desolate and filled with weeds. So he's kind of depressed when he sees all of this.
Yeah, it is really sad to see. I think that, you know, you're used to your home being so lively, and it's got to be so weird to come back to a place that, you know, Aang doesn't know that he's been gone for so long. Like, let's say maybe he thinks it's been like 2 weeks. So in his memory, it's like still fresh, but he comes home and it's just isolated. And it is really sad.
It is really sad, especially when Sokka gets knocked into the net by Aang, when Aang scores, and then he finds a beaten down Fire Nation helmet, thus confirming all their suspicions that the Fire Nation did indeed wipe out every airbender, sadly.
Yeah, one thing that didn't make a lot of sense to me is it's the same firebender mask that we see the episode prior. So the firebender mask is like approximately the same. They've had the same uniform for over 100 years.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I guess that's the Fire Nation logic, because I noticed
that's
that as
true.
Well. I thought that was kind of funny. For 100 years, they have the same military uniform.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. You know, if it's working, it's pretty scary. Why change anything up?
Yeah, so Sokka and Katara, they call Aang over to show him the Fire Nation helmet, but Katara at the last second waterbends the snow and covers the helmet, and she decides not to tell Aang about it in this instance. Was this the right move on Katara's part? Should she have told Aang about the Fire Nation here and now?
Totally. For sure. This is the ultimate example of short-term thinking. Katara is saying like, oh no, I don't want this confrontation. I don't think it makes sense to tell him now. But if you really do expect that the Fire Nation has come in and killed all of the air nomads, there are going to be more traces than just one stray firebender mask. So it seems here like she's like, oh, I don't want this confrontation. But I actually think that this is like an approachable way. You can say like, oh no, Aang, like we found this firebender mask. Maybe you should expect that it's going to be a little bit worse than we think.
Yeah, and I found this odd on Katara's part, because she was doing an amazing job this episode, setting Aang up for it, then tempering his expectations, because she knew the whole time, she knew that the Fire Nation almost certainly wiped out every airbender, and she was explaining that to Aang, so I don't understand why she now decides not to tell Aang about it. And unfortunately, Aang's gonna go into the Avatar state in a fit of rage, but at least it did go there, down there, she's able to calm him down, so it works out in the end, but yeah, I think she should have just told him right here.
Yeah, I agree. Then we see the gang walk up the hill, and we see a statue of Monk Gyatso, Aang's old monk friend. I have to say, this statue has to be over 100 years old, because no one made it after the air nomads got wiped out. This means that Monk Gyatso had a statue of himself while he was alive. Does that strike you as odd?
Yeah, it does, but it's also, like, because the thing is, I feel like Monk Gyatso, because he's a monk, he wouldn't necessarily care if there was a statue built of him, so he must have been a really high-profile airbender to have statues built of him while he's alive, especially because I don't think airbenders put too much stock into worldly possessions as well.
Yeah, it seemed weird from two perspectives. First off, like, the airbenders have statues of the people they revere. That seems a bit odd. It seems like a little bit against the airbender way. Like, I don't think that they're super materialistic. And then, like, Monk Gyatso has to walk by that all the time. Like, that would suck. I would not want a statue of me while I was alive that I have to walk by.
Yeah, and Monk Gyatso, he was a mentor to Aang while he was alive, and then we're shown a flashback of the air temple before the Fire Nation arrived. It's absolutely gorgeous. They got the sunshine coming in. They got bison flying everywhere. I'd have loved to live in the air temple. if I were to live anywhere in the Avatar universe, Airtable just seems like such a cool place to be.
That's interesting. I think, you know, I might be a little bit basic, but I think I'd want to be in one of the Earth Kingdom cities. Maybe not Ba Sing Se, but one of the smaller ones. Yeah, it seems like fun. You know, you can get your mail from those like weird shoots. You can get your cabbages whenever you want. Like, it seems like the best lifestyle, but maybe I'm
cabbages.
Maybe I'm thinking about too much of real life.
Well, because the thing with the Earth Kingdom, though, it's like, unless you're high class, like maybe you're one of like kind of like Toph's family, then you'll be set. But if you're a lower class earthbender, you're going to struggle a little bit. Whereas in the Air Temple, everybody seems to be on equal footing. It's very peaceful before the Fire Nation came and ruined it. Because as we see Monk Gyatso showing Aang they're baking these little cake things, and then they end up airbending it towards all these other airbenders, like bald heads, and like hitting them in the head with pies. I thought these pie cake things, I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, here I actually thought that Monk Gyatso and Sokka would get along. This seems like the perfect type of prank that Sokka would enjoy. Maybe not the wasting of food, because as we know, Sokka's very hungry. But I do think that this is like spiritually the same as Sokka, you know, just like always teasing people and that. One thing I thought here was, why do you actually make the cake all nice if you're just going to throw it at people? Like, it makes me so upset in real life when I see someone have an actual pie and then throw the pie in the face, as opposed to doing that, like, just the whipped cream in a pan thing. Such a waste of food.
You prefer the whipped cream in a pan to not waste food? Is that your logic there?
Yeah. Like, the whipped cream in the pan gets all of the same stuff as the actual pie. You know, it's messy, it's like a little sticky because it's very sugary. I feel like it gets everything, but then you don't have to actually bake an entire pie to get this. Here, Monk Gyatso makes a cake. He even does a little fancy twirl with his airbending. Like, it doesn't matter if there's a fancy twirl if you're just going to throw it at someone.
Yeah, it's a nice looking, like, I don't know if it's a cake or a pie, whatever type of pastry it is. It looks very nice, honestly. It looks very delicious. I'm surprised they'll just waste it. While they're doing all of this, they have a little conversation, and Aang's telling Monk Gyatso that he doesn't think he wants to be the Avatar. He doesn't think that's for him. And Monk Gyatso's explaining to him that that's his duty and path, and that the monks made a mistake telling him before the age of 16, but that's the path he's going to walk on. And Monk Gyatso does a good job making Aang feel good about the fact that he is the Avatar, and making it all having a nice little lighthearted moment by throwing the pies at these guys' heads.
Yeah, it's a lot of responsibility, and I think we'll see in flashbacks in later episodes that as soon as Aang is told he's the Avatar, people start treating him differently, and, you know, he has this new responsibility he didn't have before, and I gotta say, like, being a bender would be cool, but being the Avatar, that's a lot of responsibility.
It is. It's a lot of pressure, especially because we've talked about, for Aang, he's a pacifist at heart. And when you're the Avatar, like I said, you have to solve a lot of stuff with force and with violence, something that's against Aang's very nature and personality. So we go back to Team Avatar, and there's this really cool airbending door. They're walking around the air temple, and then they see this door, and Aang says there's somebody he needs to meet back there. And he opens this door with airbending, and I thought it was crazy. This door looked like something out of a Legend of Zelda level. That's what I thought when I saw this. I really like the design, how he ends up, because he airbends into it, and then it starts. It's almost like a survivor puzzle. I don't know how exactly to describe it. You know what I'm talking about? Their little door they got here.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So the airbending lock is really unique because only an airbender can get by this. We actually see the same thing on the fire temple with the monks, that there's a lock that the firebenders have to use in order to get into it. I was thinking, like, having locks that only people of a certain bending class can get through is pretty smart. You know, it keeps anyone out who's a non-bender, and it keeps out any enemies who might be other benders. I was thinking the only one that didn't make sense is, how could you have an earth lock? Does that seem possible, Zach?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe if you're an earthbender and you could somehow morph a rock to an exact size, maybe. That's the only thing I could think of off the top of my head. But yeah, I don't know how exactly an earth
person
would be able to open a lock.
I think that the earth lock is probably the worst of them, but I think you make a good point that it could be like a weirdly shaped rock.
Yes. So then we get some really ominous music while they're walking into the sanctuary. When there's no big bad here. So I kind of thought we get a shot of like Katara and Sokka walking in the dark. And we get these horns and this dark music. I thought that was kind of surprising considering there's nothing really back there.
Yeah, they are trying to build it up as some like super scary thing, but I think at the end it's nothing much. The other thing I think is funny in this moment is that Sokka is so excited to get into the air temple, like past the airbending lock, because he thinks that there could be some cured meats back there. I don't know about like what preservative technology they have, but 100-year-old meat is a stretch.
Yeah, I don't know what Sokka's thinking here. If he did manage to find any meat back there, it would 100% not be edible after being 100 years old.
Exactly. He thinks the air nomads have the technology for 100 years of preservatives, like they have some freezer or something.
And not only that, air nomads don't even eat meat, so I don't know why he's looking. Maybe there's some cured vegetables back there.
Wait, yeah. Yeah, the air nomads are vegetarian. What is he talking about, cured meat?
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking.
Wow, all-time bad take.
He got so hungry, his brain wasn't functioning properly.
That makes a lot more sense.
So we cut back to Zhao and Zuko. Zhao berates Zuko for losing Aang and tells him he's off the case. It was almost like one of those old cop procedurals. It's like, you lost Avatar, now you're not on the case no more. And Zuko's pissed. He tries to attack Zhao and gets held back. Meanwhile, Iroh just asks, he's like, hey, do you guys have any more ginseng tea?
Yeah.
That's what's on Iroh's mind while this is going on.
Exactly.
His nephew's fighting a general, and all he could think about is, I want some more ginseng tea.
Exactly. Here we have a pretty tense moment between Commander Zhao and Zuko, and Iroh's just chilling in the background. He's like, can I have another glass from the exact guards that were just preventing Zuko a second ago from fighting?
Yes. And then, I mean, anything else you want to talk about in this scene?
Scene
we got here?
Yeah, I will say that this episode in particular, it feels like there's a lot of whiplash. Like, even going through this episode recap, like, we see one small scene in one place, and then we jump to the Avatar. We go, Avatar Zuko, Avatar Zuko. And they're really small scenes. I think that, in later episodes, we have more of a storyline before, like, jumping back and forth. It kind of felt like I had whiplash during this episode, actually.
Yeah, honestly, you're right. Because then, like you just said, they have some really small scenes, and then they keep going back and forth.
Yeah.
So we go back to Katara and Aang in the sanctuary, and they're marveling at all these past Avatar states. Sokka, at this point, you know what he says? And this shocked me. He's like, Katara, you don't really believe in all this Avatar state mumbo-jumbo. It's like, you see these statues with your own eyes. You can see that these statues have been built. How do you not believe? I understand if Sokka had never seen this before, but what's the phrase? Seeing is believing. How can he still disbelieve without...
I agree. Like, he literally has met the Avatar. He's met Aang, who is actually the Avatar. He knows all the stories. Like, what more proof does this guy need? I mean, he's really stuck on some old philosophies in his head.
Yeah, that kind of shocked me, because I thought Sokka, by this point, would understand Aang is the Avatar. There are past Avatars, etc., yep. etc.
Exactly.
He does not.
Yeah, here we see, when we're looking at all these statues, that the Avatar seems to be a really male-dominated industry. If we look at all the statues, a lot of them are male-presenting. I thought that was interesting, because as we know, Avatar Kyoshi, two avatars before Aang, is presumably female. And
the last airbender avatar was also female. I think her name is Yang Chen.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah. And yeah. I think even more interesting is that we see Aang in a second. He's going to walk up to Avatar Roku, who's the avatar before him. But immediately to Roku's left, we see an earthbender avatar, but it's not Kyoshi. So I kind of wonder if this is like a detail that they miss, and they didn't know they're about to introduce Kyoshi in the next episode.
Yes. Yeah, and maybe they made this episode and did all the animation before they realized they were going to introduce Kyoshi. So maybe it's just an oversight on the animator's part. But yeah. this room, I want to talk about a little bit. It's a really cool setup they got here. So they have all the avatars lined up in a spiral going around the room upwards. And later on in the episode, when Aang goes into the avatar state, they have the really cool shot of every single one of the statues glowing, their eyes glowing. And I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, it is super cool, and it explains the Avatar pretty well, how there's an Avatar cycle, and it goes, from the different elements. So we get air, and then we get water, earth, and fire. And we can see that like with the explanation. It makes it super clear to go through this lore, which like could be somewhat confusing, but instead it like it sets us up pretty nicely.
Yes. So then the Team Avatar, they hear somebody walking into the room and they assume it's a firebender. So Sokka, you know what? He says, nobody make a sound. And then Katara says he's making a sound by saying nobody make a sound. And then both Aang and Sokka shush Katara for telling Sokka to be quiet. I thought that was kind of dumb on there. Like, poor Katara. She just gets shushed by both of them for no reason, I thought.
I know, Katara.
This is a funny moment here.
Katara here is pointing something out that's correct. Like,
exactly.
Sokka is making a sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so the reveal here is that it's not a Fire Nation member, but it's a lemur.
Yeah.
And both Aang and Sokka start to give chase. One of them wants a pet, and the other one wants dinner. I think you guys know which one wants what.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Zach, would you rather be someone's pet, or would you rather be dinner?
That's tough, honestly. I wouldn't want to be subservient, so you know what? Just make me dinner. I'll just be
Wow.
Yeah.
I think Momo is treated pretty well. Maybe I wouldn't want to be everyone's pet, but I wouldn't mind being
Avatar's pet. Actually, I want to be Momo. Like, I'd want to be Team Avatar's pet, yes. But yeah. A pet to the average person, maybe not.
Fair.
So we get Aang and Sokka giving chase, and what's funny is that Sokka just has no chance in this chase. Aang sprints past him, running along the wall, and then Aang shoots an air sphere at Sokka, knocking him face first into the snow. And then we get a really cool shot of Aang chasing what we will soon know as Momo down the cliffside, and we see Aang jumping from rock to rock down the cliffs, which I thought was a stellar shot. Amazing job here.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I think it's fun. Sokka tries to swipe at Aang's legs, and instead of falling, he just runs on the side of the wall, which is just like, it's so great. Like, Aang is so much better of a fighter, even though he really is just like a child having fun.
Yeah, I think airbending is just a very powerful type of bending, and it's a type of bending where it's not about your physical strength. So even as a child, if you're an airbender, you're still going to be a lot more powerful than the average non-bender.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. We never actually touched on Aang's voice actor. So Aang is voiced by Zach Tyler, who I always knew because of The Backyardigans. I think he voiced Pablo in The Backyardigans, which was a show I watched when I was younger. And funny thing here, I saw Backyardigans trending for some reason because the creator was a black woman, which I thought was cool. It was like celebrating black voices. But then the funny thing is, I did some research on her. And you know what motivated her when she was making the Backyardigans? Die Hard and Terminator 2.
What?
Those were the creator of Backyardigans' motivations when she when she conceptualized Backyardigans. I forget how exactly she described why those were her inspirations, but yeah, if you guys want to look it up, the creator of Backyardigans, those were her two inspirations.
This is the most shocking thing you've ever said to me. This does not compute. Like, I'm so lost. Okay, I guess I need to do a little more research on the Backyardigans.
Yeah, I don't, my apologies, I don't have the exact quote pulled up. I saw it yesterday and I thought I saved it, but I do not. I remember the creator, her name is Janice Burgess.
So, all right. Maybe we can put something in the notes.
Yeah, so, I got the exact quote, so I'll read it quickly. So this is what she says. I really enjoy a big adventure. I think Die Hard is one of the greatest films ever, not to mention Terminator 2. I love those big films. I wanted to bring some of that fantastical nature to young children, but to do it in a way that is safe, hopefully not scary, and not imitatable, except in your head. Imitatable? I don't know. Janice Burgess on the inspirations for the Backyardigans.
Okay, yeah.
You look very shocked.
I just, like, yeah, so I guess I kind of get what she's saying. Like, you know, Die Hard is, like, a crazy movie that goes on an adventure, same with Terminator 2, but then she jumps to Backyardigans and I'm lost again.
I mean, the Backyardigans was a very innovative show, I think. I didn't really appreciate it when I was younger, but it wasn't a bad show. So I can see how she was inspired by that.
Watch out, Zach. If you keep talking about how much you like the Backyardigans, you'll be doing a Backyardigans podcast in no time.
I think I'm good. I barely remember anything about the Backyardigans. So I just found that hilarious because I just read that yesterday and I couldn't stop laughing.
For sure.
So we'll keep going after that Backyardigans tangent. My apologies. So what's next here? So they give chase And we go back to Zhao and Zuko. So they're bickering once more. And Zhao tells Zuko his own father doesn't even want him. His own father has no use for him. And I always feel bad for Zuko because no matter what, anybody can insult him with like, oh yeah, even your own dad doesn't want you. And what's his comeback going to be to that? It's the ultimate comeback and it's only geared towards him. And he has no response to it every time, pretty much.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, we see Zuko try to make the your dad joke to Aang. This is not a good joke. Like, people in the Avatar universe do not understand good jokes. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, it's a good burn, I guess, but there's so many more better things you could do here. You could make fun of his face. You can make fun of his haircut. Like, gotta have something that's a little bit more deep-rooted than this.
Yes, and then Zuko challenges him to an Agni Kai, a Fire Nation duel, to which Zhao responds that it's a shame his father won't be there to watch him lose. And this is the first episode with Zhao, and they really set him up as antagonist to Zuko right away here. Even though in the first two episodes, as a viewer, we're not rooting for Zuko at all. But now in this episode, we're like, okay, we kind of want to see Zuko punk Zhao here. At least those are my thoughts watching this episode.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they do a good job of introducing Zhao, making him look intimidating, act intimidating, kind of being a jerk the whole time. And then they like get you to root for Zuko, which I think is like the point of this little interlude. I also find it fun that they introduce the Agni Kai. So the rules of the Agni Kai here, they're like formal fights between firebenders. I think it's supposed to be like an honorable way to settle your disputes rather than, you know, just like mouthing off the whole time. And I believe the rules are that the first person to burn another person wins, which I think is an interesting way to do it. I don't think you necessarily have to kill them, but I think that in order to technically win the Agni Kai, you have to burn someone. And I'm just excited to have a game that has rules.
Yeah, exactly. And then Iroh asked Zuko what happened the last time he dueled a master, which ended up being his father, of course. And then mm-hmm. we get this really amazing shot, one of the best shots in the episode. So they have the camera panning from Zuko's good eye to his bad eye, his burnt eye. And he says, I'll never forget what happened to him.
Yeah, that's another example of a really cool shot. I think that they do many of these shots where they frame Zuko using his burn face to juxtapose any sort of like either whether it's with Aang or whether it's like better memories. And I think this is an example of a really good cinematic moment, even though it's obviously animated.
Yes. And then now, like you said, we get another very quick skip or jump back to Team Avatar. And we see while Aang is chasing the lemur, who we'll soon learn is going to be named Momo, when he's chasing him, he comes to a room strewn with Fire Nation skeleton corpses. And at the end, he sees an airbender corpse. And from the necklace that this corpse has on, you can tell that it is Aang's mentor, Monk Gyatso. And when I first saw this, it's damn, Monk Gyatso, he went out, but he took a lot of firebenders with him. He put up a fight. There's a lot of firebender corpses there.
I know.
I wonder how they even killed him.
Yeah, he takes out about 30 people next to him. That's impressive. Like, I get that they got to Monk Gyatso eventually, but Monk Gyatso is pretty powerful.
Yeah, he put up a fight, because there. If you look at the room, this shot, there's just Fire Nation corpse after Fire Nation corpse. We got their helmets all over the place.
Exactly.
And Monk Gyatso is just in the back.
Yeah, and then
Aang... Oh, continue?
Yeah, then we see Aang crying, which is so sad, but Sokka comes in and says a line that's pretty funny. I guess Sokka comes in and sees that Aang is crying, and he says, I wasn't really going to eat the lemur, as if that's what Aang was just so upset about.
I know Sokka hasn't known Aang for a long time, but why would Aang be bursting into tears over this lemur?
Look, I don't know.
But then, yeah, so Sokka, Sokka also notices Monk Gyatso. Mm-hmm. And Aang goes into a fit of rage and jumps into the Avatar state. And Katara, who's still in the sanctuary, sees what I was talking about earlier. She's still in the sanctuary and she sees all the statues' eyes light up.
Yeah.
Just like they're going into the Avatar state as well.
And I think this is a really cool way to show that when Aang goes into the Avatar state, not only like do his eyes light up blue, but he's also like every past life is also going to like do the same thing. So you can see, as we'll find out later in a bit more clear terms, that whenever Aang goes into the Avatar state, he's drawing on the spirit from all of the other Avatars that have lived before him.
Yes, and it's not just the statues in the sanctuary glowing, because I think right after we're going to see every statue of any avatar-related statue starts glowing all over the world. So when Aang goes into the Avatar state here, it basically notifies every single other person in the world that the Avatar is back.
Yeah.
And we see a shot of the Fire Nation like, oh, tell Fire Lord Ozai that the Avatar has returned.
Yeah, one thing that didn't make sense to me here is that Aang goes into the Avatar state last episode. So if Aang goes into the Avatar state last episode and Aang was in the Avatar state for about 100 years in the iceberg, shouldn't everyone already know that he was back, at least from whenever he went into the Avatar state and crashed the Fire Nation ship?
Yeah, honestly, yeah, you're right. That is an oversight. I don't think he was in the Avatar state when he was in the iceberg, but I think last episode, yes, we did see him go into the Avatar state and wipe out Zuko and his crew and damage their ship. So yeah, kind of surprising that they aren't able to, they don't notice it then, but now they do.
Another small moment here as we're panning between the different temples. First off, all the architecture looks really cool. I think the Earth Temple looks very nice, and then the Fire Temple looks pretty badass, sitting on top of a lava, or a volcano, I guess, not on top of lava. But we hear one of the fire monks literally say, send word to the Fire Lord immediately that the Avatar has returned. And I think maybe that we named the episode the wrong thing. This week's episode is called the Southern Air Temple. Last week's called the Avatar Returns. I think maybe last week should have been called the Avatar Returns if it's literally name checked in the episode.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, they could have named it. But then what would they have named last week's episode then instead?
Maybe this sequence should have been in last week's episode, because that's when he first goes into the Avatar state, actually.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then it would make Zhao and Zuko stuff would still make sense, because Zhao would know by that point that the Avatar has returned, and then he would know Zuko was lying to him instantly. But, I mean, he ends up figuring that out anyways. Yeah.
Also, I think they might have missed an interesting moment for Zhao to believe Zuko and be like, oh, maybe you didn't see the Avatar. But then everything starts glowing blue, like with the eyes. Maybe there's like some Avatar relic from Roku. And so Zhao can be like, oh, you did lie to me. I think that could have been cool, too.
Yeah, that would have been an interesting way to go about it. But I do, at the end of the day, I do like the way they go about it here.
True.
So they do a good job overall. So Aang creates an airbender, like, gust of wind so powerful it sends Sokka careening off into the distance. Katara rushes to where they are, and Sokka fills her in, telling her that Aang found Monk Gyatso's corpse.
Yep. Yeah, nothing much to say here. I think we jump to the Agni Kite next, which is pretty cool.
Yes, so this is like the only real fight this episode. So I guess this is the only fight we'll be giving a rating to, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. So we see Zuko and Zhao's Agni Kai. Now, even though just two episodes ago, Zuko was learning basic firebending combos from Iroh, he actually manages to best Zhao here. So, yeah, because you want to describe this fight in further detail, Jig?
First off, I think the Agni Kai is cool because you get to see the raw power of firebending. And I think that the reason why Zuko's able to win is because Zhao gets too aggressive. So at the beginning, you know, Zuko's letting his emotions get the best out of him, and he's throwing weak attack after weak attack, and it's not really doing much. But then Zhao, you know, gets a little bit of the upper hand, and he starts going on the offensive, and I think he gets greedy. And that's when Zuko makes his move and trips him up. And we actually get like three cuts of that move, from every different angle.
Zuko does this little like break dancing move because Zhao has him. Zuko's on the ground and Zhao's about to deliver a finishing blow, but Zuko does this little break dance move and is able to get Zhao backing up. And we hear Iroh here saying, take his root. And I guess that means like trying to attack his base rather than attack him up top.
Yeah.
Some good advice from Iroh.
Yeah. And it makes sense because firebending is so emotional and passionate that I think that, you know, if Zuko is overextending himself or Zhao a little bit later, that you really do leave yourself vulnerable. You know, firebending comes from like the breath and comes from this passion. But I think if you're like too passionate, you're going to end up just leaving yourself vulnerable and ultimately getting destroyed.
Yes. So Zuko has Zhao basically down and out. Zhao's on the ground and Zuko's about to deliver the finishing blow. Zhao yells at him. He's like, do it. And then Zuko shoots a blast, but directly beside Zhao's head, deciding to be the better man, which is honorable on Zuko's part.
Yeah, I agree. Zhao's saying that Zuko's dishonorable and a coward, but Zuko here's actually way more honorable than Zhao. Plus, Zuko's cut. I mean, I know he's only 16, but that dude's got abs for days.
Yeah, when he takes off his shirt to go into the battle, the Agni Khan, I was like, damn, Zuko's surprisingly ripped. I never really noticed until now.
Exactly, like the collarbone, like, damn. Like, yeah, he's pretty ripped. And then Zhao, too top heavy. Not a fan. His neck muscles are way too big.
You're not Marin Zhao's physique?
Not at all. I'm totally sold on Zhao's neck muscles bulging out. Too much for me.
So basically Zhao takes a fat L here and he gets salty and tries a sneak attack while Zuko has his back turned. But Iroh comes in and quells Zhao's attack effortlessly. Like, if there's Agni Kai, even now, Zhao versus Iroh, I think Iroh wins in 2 seconds. Like, Iroh's extremely powerful.
Easily. Yeah. And we see that Iroh has masterful closing speed. Like, he's able to close that distance in no time at all.
And he's able to, like, effortlessly shove Zhao, and Zhao, like, slides across the ship, which I thought was impressive on Iroh's part.
Yeah.
Iroh quells the attack, and then he calls Zhao disgraceful and states that even in exile, Zuko is more honorable than Zhao. Then later, Zuko's like, Iroh, did you really mean that? Oh, no, because at the end, Iroh's like, oh, but your tea was delicious. And then Zuko's like, oh, did you really mean what you said about me? And then Iroh instead is like, yeah, I did mean what I said. That tea was delicious.
Yeah.
So Iroh's focus is still on tea.
For sure. I think that Iroh knows, you know, by saying, oh, yeah, just the tea, that he knows, like, you know, Zuko can pick up on that message that he also, like, cares for him. And it is, like, it's cool. Zuko turns his back, and Zuko was totally vulnerable. There's no way he was going to be able to turn around, and Iroh's able to, you know, show some great closing speed and keep him safe.
Yeah, what kind of, like, Zhao's a commander, so he's pretty high up on the food chain, but this is a couple of bad L's. First, he loses to Zuko, the exiled prince, in an Agni Kai, and then he does a sneak attack. I don't know if I'm a commander. You got a lot of egg on your face if you're doing some stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He was
not commander-like here, I feel like.
Exactly. We find out at the beginning of the episode that he was a captain, now promoted to a commander. I think maybe, you know, he should get relegated back to captain.
A demotion? Yeah. So now we go back to Aang in the Avatar state. He's floating above Katara and Sokka, where he's got air surrounding him. And this is where Katara really shines. And in my opinion, she's the MVP of this episode. Because Katara, as the series goes forward, she's always going to be the most mature person in Team Avatar. And she also kind of functions as the de facto mother of the group to all of them. To Aang, to Sokka, and even to Toph going forward in Season 2. So Katara gives Aang an extremely passionate speech here. She tells him she knows what it's like to lose someone you love, but that Sokka and her are his family now, because Sokka and Katara lost their mother to the firebenders. She was killed at their hands, so they know what Aang is going through.
Yeah, I think this is a really sweet moment, and probably a good point to point out the voice acting of Katara. So Katara is voiced by Mae Whitman. Zach, fun fact, we can trace back Mae Whitman and get to us. So Mae Whitman, voice of Katara, is in the show Arrested Development, where she plays Anne Veal. Always made fun of. Every time she comes on screen, they always say her, which is just like a little dig. But interestingly, Jonathan Pinner is in an episode of Arrested Development. So if we use that little connection, we can get back to Survivor, where we know, you know, Rob Sesternino. So we are only a few connections away from Mae Whitman. So I think it's the closest connection we have.
Would you look at that? Maybe if we talk to Rob and then he talks to Jonathan Penner, and then maybe Penner can somehow get in touch with Mae Whitman. Maybe one day we'll have Mae Whitman in our little rinky-dink podcast.
It only takes 4 people taking time out of their day to make it happen.
I'll never say never.
Yeah, that's true.
Try to be optimistic. But Katara is able to calm Aang down here. And even Sokka actually has a good... What does Sokka say here? He's like, we'll always be there for you, Aang. Something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But this is the first time we get Sokka actually saying something legitimately meaningful. Not honest. Yeah. Prior to this, I don't think anything he said was really of value. But we get Sokka and Katara really being great friends to Aang's here. And they will honestly end up being a family going forward after this.
Yeah, and then we get one more addition to the family once Aang exits the Avatar state, where Momo officially joins the fam.
Yeah, and Momo must be very intelligent because he knows Sokka was hungry and actually brings Sokka a bunch of fruits and food and all that. And Sokka just immediately sits on the floor and just starts chewing on, like munching on it. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Momo just puts it like directly on the floor and Sokka just picks it up and starts shoveling it into his mouth.
Momo knows the ways to Sokka's heart. All you have to do is give him just a little bit of food and you will have his undying loyalty.
Yes, and then Aang actually ends up naming Momo here in this instance. Momo is also voiced by Dee Bradley Baker.
Oh,
I mentioned
nice.
That in the last couple of episodes. Same person who voices Appa. He's known, I think he used to host a Nickelodeon show, but then he ended up carving a niche as like a voice actor for all these animals and all these different shows. Most famously, Perry the Platypus.
Yes. I think that the animal characters do a very good job in this, so hats off to him.
Yeah, and I guess that's all for us in this episode.
Yeah, so...
Overall thoughts on this episode, Jacob?
I think it's okay. It's not my favorite episode. We'll get to this a little bit more in the episode rankings in a few minutes. I think that it does well to, you know, build the lore, put some new characters there, introduce Zhao, but ultimately it's a little slow, and I think that the whiplash that we get from going between the Fire Nation ship with Zhao and Zuko and back to the Southern Air Temple is a little bit much for me. What about you, Zach?
I thoroughly enjoyed this episode, honestly. I agree with you. I didn't love the whiplash, but I like how they set everything up. I like Katara, Sokka in this episode better than I did them in the previous episodes. I like Zuko and his Agni Kai and the introduction of Commander Zhao. So I'd say I was a little bit higher on this episode than you are.
Honestly. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, Zach, let's get into our feedback. As we mentioned earlier, you two can join Team Avatar Podcasting by... writing into Avatar at Posho Recaps. Zach, we had a few people write in. Aaron.
Should we give our episode ratings before we... Or you want to do that after?
Either one. What do you want?
Oh, okay. We'll just do it after. No
problem. Okay, sounds good. Cool. So Aaron wrote in. He said that he really enjoyed the Zuko half of episode 3, but the Aang portion was kind of boring. I think that's... I kind of agree with him. And then he wished that we got some more flashback scenes. Maybe Aang playing airball in the past would have been nice. Yeah, I agree. We could have seen how that game actually is played.
Yeah, a lot of people were interested in airball. I think Sarah in the Patreon group was asking us the rules of airball. I thought the rules were relatively straightforward. I didn't think that we talked about it a little bit. But.
Yeah, so maybe we can talk about this more. You know how much I love rules to games. So Sarah did write in and ask, what are the rules? So Aang at one point says that's Aang 7, Sokka 0. So do you think that Sokka has gotten knocked down like 7 times? Or is it more like football and it's like 7 points for one score?
No. I think Aang has scored 7 times, at least. I think that's what we were being led to believe.
All right.
Because I think what it is like once you get a shot through their little wooden net, I guess, for lack of a better term, that counts as a goal or a point.
Yeah.
And yes.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that it'd be funny if you hit someone through the ring, you get like 3 extra points. So maybe the fact that Aang's able to hit him so hard through the net, through the hoop, he's able to get a few more points. How many people do you think play airball? Is it like a one-on-one sport or is it like 5v5 like basketball?
I'm not sure. I think it's not one-on-one. I think it's a team sport, honestly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that. Cool. We also had Lydia write in. Lydia said that the hero of the week was Momo for bringing sustenance despite the threat of death. Yeah, I agree. You know, Momo's at least Sokka's hero. And she said that the zero of the week is Zuko's crew, who gave up the secret that they found the Avatar in 1.7 seconds.
That's very exact. Were you there with Lydia when you guys watched the episode? Did she have a timer? Did she just have a stopwatch to get the exact 1.7 seconds?
I don't know if she had a timer. I think maybe she timed it. I would like to think that, you know, she's as thorough as I would be and she timed it. I did not see a stopwatch myself.
She also was very low on season 1, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Reading her email this week and last week, I thought it's pretty funny stuff, though, not gonna lie.
Yeah, her episode rankings are not very good. I think that they're dragging down the rankings as a whole, but it's okay. As soon as she likes an episode, I think the rankings will go higher.
Okay.
We also had Felipe write in and ask us, why is Katara the best, full stop? Zach, I think you can take this one.
Yeah, I think Katara this episode is very good. This is her best episode, and I think she is, especially the MVP of the Team Avatar plot line this episode. She does an amazing job, always bringing everybody back down to reality, both figuratively and literally when Aang was in the Avatar state. And she does an excellent job being the mature voice of reason, which she will continue to be going forward. So I thought this was a great episode for Katara, and she is the person I would give if Lydia's rating 0 of the week to Zuko's crew, I'll give Katara the 4 of the week, 4 cabbages for Katara.
Makes sense. Ooh, that's good. I think our episode ranking should be how many cabbages. I like that one.
Sure. Okay, we'll go with that going forward.
Perfect. And now it's a great transition to our episode rankings. So each week we will rank each episode of the series. Zach will give a score from 1 to 4 cabbages. I will give a score from 1 to 4 cabbages. And listeners will give their score. The listener score will be averaged up as a third data point. And then you'll get the average of my score, Zach's score, and the listener score for the official Aang in there episode ranking. Zach, yeah, you want to kick us off this week?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. For this episode, I'll give it a 3.5 cabbages out of 4. I enjoyed this episode as a whole. The only thing I didn't love was the jumping back and forth. But I really liked how this episode set up a lot of stuff going forward. I liked seeing, this is the first time we even see the Earth Kingdom and the Fire Kingdoms and the Fire Nation. So I thought that was really incredible. So overall, yeah, I'll go with a 3.5 out of 4. Solid episode.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. This episode sets things up really well. We get to see all 4 of the nations, or I guess kingdoms or whatever they are.
Call themselves, yeah.
Yeah. And that's interesting. We set up the world, we get Zhao, but ultimately I think that the whiplash of the episode was a bit too much. I'm going to give this episode 3 cabbages out of 4 cabbages. Our audience was not as hot. You know, it doesn't help that Lydia is over here dragging down the score. The audience rating was a 2.7. So that will leave episode 3, The Southern Air Temple, at a score of 3.07. Our lowest episode yet, I guess, of 3. So not that shocking.
Really? Wow. Of the 3, I don't know. This is, if it wasn't for the jumping back and forth really quickly, I would say this is the best episode of the 3, honestly.
I think that this episode does the most for the series, but I think I agree that maybe it's not my favorite episode of the show standalone.
Yeah, definitely not. I would agree with that as well. So should we jump into our next segment?
Yeah, let's do some Battle of the Battles. Just one battle here in this episode, but it's the same sort of ranking. We'll rank every battle in Avatar, giving it a scale from 1 to 4. So let's start off with the audience rating of the battle. The audience thought that the Zuko and Zhao Agni Kai was a 3.6. Pretty high for a fight.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Honestly, I'll go even higher. I'll go 3.75 out of 4. I thought this was really set up.
Wow.
I like this fight a lot. I mean, like, I don't think... Season 2 is an amazing season, but I don't know if there's any, like, way better fights in Season 2 or even in the rest of Season 1 than this Agni Kai. I liked it a lot, and I remember when I first watched this, I was surprised. I didn't think Zuko would be able to best Zhao here, especially considering we just saw Zuko 2 episodes prior learning basic firebending techniques. And I liked Iroh giving him advice, middle of the match, Iroh coaching. So yeah, I'll give this 3.75 out of 4.
Yeah, you make a lot of good points. I'm right there behind you at a 3.65 on my ranking. I think it's pretty cool. We get to see the Agni Kai, which is, you know, fun. It's something that'll keep coming up throughout the series. We get to see Zhao's power versus Zuko's power. And yeah, we get to see Zuko, you know, kicking some ass. That will leave the Zhao versus Zuko Agni Kai at a 3.67. That is higher than the Aang Escapes from the Ship from Book 1, Episode 2, which was at a 3.6. So our highest fight to date.
Wow, good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, and then now do we just jump into our fearsome foursome segment that is still not void of a good name?
Final name pending, but I do love this segment. So yeah, let's jump in. As a reminder, we're going to take a group of 4 things or people, and we're going to tell each one which bending class they would be. So who's the most fire, who's the most water, earth, and air. And this week, we're doing the Seinfeld 4.
Yes. And I thought this would be a lot easier than I realized, not going to lie. Because I think Jacob mentioned this offline, I agree, and especially George typifies the most. All four of these people would be non-benders.
Yeah.
Especially George. I don't think George would be a bender, quite frankly. I think if I were to give him anything, I'd say he'd be a non-bender. But for the sake of this exercise, we will give each of these people a bending type.
Yeah, I agree. I also think Kramer's a non-bender. He's so much like the Cabbage Man, just like constantly annoyed. Like, in fact, yeah, all these people are non-benders, but yeah.
Kramer would just be the Avatar. I think Kramer
Whoa.
I'm kidding.
Can you
imagine Kramer as like the force in the universe to keep everything at peace? It's just him.
I do not think the universe would be at peace.
I don't think so either.
Exactly.
But it'd be an interesting thing to happen nonetheless.
Yeah, let's start out with Kramer then. So I think that he might be an airbender. Hear me out, Zach. I think he's very imaginative. That's where I'm going with this one. He has so many get-rich-quick schemes. Like, I know at one point he's trying to like sell some raincoats. I know that he has the whole like bottle deposit scam. And as well as one funny moment where he adopts the highway and then he changes it from 4 lanes to 2 lanes so it can be luxurious. That sort of imaginative stuff made me think airbender. What do you think about Kramer?
See, when I saw Kramer, and maybe I'm just too stuck on the scene of him saying it's like a sauna in here and him super tan, but I just saw him as a firebender. And the reason being, everything you said is true. He does have an airbender-esque enthusiasm for everything. But I also think Kramer is so quick to get into these little confrontations with people that I just, and that seems very anti-airbender to me. So I pegged Kramer as a firebender. I think he does get into these little arguments with people all the time. Every time he'll jump into Jerry's room or Jerry's apartment and be like, oh, you won't believe who this, I had this problem with this person, blah, blah, blah. So I feel like for that reason, I have him as a firebender.
I can see where you're coming from. Definitely, if you're going into like the individualistic and passionate side, he's the firebender. So I think, I'm fine keeping Kramer as our firebender. That makes sense to me.
Yes. Okay. Then who did you want to jump to next here?
Let's do Elaine next.
Okay.
You want to start us off?
Yeah. So for me, I had Elaine as an airbender for kind of the opposite reason I had Kramer. Elaine does get into confrontations with people as well, but I feel like Elaine actually tries to avoid this having confrontations if she doesn't have to. I think back to the man she was dating whose race was ambiguous, and the whole time she's trying not to be offensive and try, because I think if Elaine, let's say she's a firebender or somebody more aggressive, she would just straight up be like, what ethnicity are you? She would ask that immediately. But because Elaine is kind of a nice normal person at heart, she doesn't end up asking until the end of the episode. She ends up figuring it out, but she kind of dances around the issue. So for reasons like that, I have her pegged as my airbender, especially compared to the rest of this group, especially.
Yeah, I think that
she exhibits the most airbender quality.
I think that makes sense. You know, no one can dance as poorly as she dances, not care about what other people think, unless you're an airbender. So that one makes sense to me.
Yeah. And then, so should we go to George?
Yes. So I think George is a waterbender, and maybe it's just the joke that I have in my head, but you know, he saves a whale and he wants to be a marine biologist. And to me, that seems like a waterbender, a bad waterbender. He does not have his emotions in check. I want to make that clear that he would not be a good waterbender, but I think he's the waterbender.
George would be like one of those swamp benders who will come across soon in season one.
Yeah.
Be one of those people just like chilling with his like cloth just bending in a swamp. So that's what I think George would be.
I think we'd have some nice like slapstick type comedy where nothing's going his way. He's like constantly getting lost in the swamp or something like that. Yeah, I see that one.
Yeah, and then I guess that leaves Jerry as our earthbender. And honestly, Jerry, I think he's an earthbender. He's kind of, he maintains a neutral temper most of the time compared to his friends in Seinfeld. So yeah, I think Jerry, I'd peg him as an earthbender. What about you, Jacob?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. You know, as we said, it's so hard to tell these people are benders because none of them are really in control over themselves, it seems. So I think that's what makes you a bender. But yeah, Jerry, I think, is the earthbender here. Maybe it's just the fact that he like does some stand up. I think that, you know, being perceptive like that, I think an earthbender like would understand the lay of the land. I feel like that's a trait that we could see there.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And then next week, Well, first of all, if you have a name for this segment, feel free to send it in because we don't really have a name for it just yet. But next week, the quad group we'll be going over will be the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Well, I think it'll be a lot easier to peg them in as benders than it was the Seinfeld crew.
Totally agree. Thanks for Victor for writing that one in. I think the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles would be a fun one to go back down. Another childhood staple that we can go down memory lane for.
Yeah. And besides that, do we have anything else?
I think that's it, Zach. So let's just get some feedback, comments, and questions in. So any feedback can be sent to @PostShowRecaps on Twitter or our email, avatar@postshowrecaps.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review us as soon as we get our Avatar-only feed.
I think we have a feed on Apple Music, though, now, or on Apple Podcasts, I think. Oh, that's up.
Sick. Okay, well,
So if that's there, because my friend was telling me he downloaded it through that. So if you see us on Apple Podcasts or Music, make sure to rate us 5 stars, share it with any of your friends who like Avatar. We need all the support we can get, and we're very appreciative. Thanks to everybody who sent in feedback. You guys are the best.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for joining Team Avatar Podcasters with us. Next up, we'll have Book 1, Episode 4. That will be called The Warriors of Kyoshi, dropping in your feed on September 8th. So get your feedback in on September 5th, that Saturday. Zach, where can people find you?
People can find me at ZachMohammed32 on Twitter. And what about you, Jacob?
People can find me at JK Redman. I was also invited to go on the Brazilian Dragons podcast as we're talking about Big Brother All-Stars 1. So if you are interested in Big Brother, you can find me there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Fun stuff over there discussing with Felipe and actually TikTok Nicole talking about Big Brother.
Wow. You guys got an all-star crew there talking about Big Brother.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. I think that's it from us.
Yeah, thanks to everybody who listened, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.